Hi, good evening, everybody. Yes, I accept all the compliments of how well I clean up tonight. I'm actually at a wedding and the
Oh.
chuppah just ended, and I brought my laptop here to the wedding hall, and I went over to the owner of the facility and I said, "Just give me a quiet room somewhere and get me on Wi-Fi because I'm not skipping this class tonight." So here
Oh.
we are. So I'm
Right.
wearing my beautiful outfit here. So we're good to go.
I
Okay.
thought you looked really nice
Thank you. Thank
for
you.
a change.
Here's my
Yeah.
ouch. Who said that?
Rabbi T, Anne's gonna
I
think you
did.
dress like this all the time. Anne's
Yeah,
gonna think you
well,
dress like this all the time.
yeah, it is a nice tie. It was actually one of my kids' wedding ties. So we're good. Anyway, welcome back. Really wonderful to have you all. We are continuing our discussion in Pirkei Avos. Pirkei Avos is Ethics of the Fathers, and I as I say often, we desperately, in the world in which we live, we need constant reminders about ethics and values. We are bombarded with so many contrary views and opinions that we have to remind ourselves, what is our Jewish perspective on so many issues that come up in life? So we are up to, I'm just gonna share my screen here. Who's sending messages here? How am I supposed to do this here? Hold on, hold on. There's too many things going on here. How do you work this thing? Team chat. Okay, great. Excellent. Whatever. I'm gonna lower this. All right, here we go. Share. All right, now we're talking. Okay, fine. Here we are. Okay. Everybody can see this number two.
Yes.
I don't know how you make it bigger
We can
on
see
the
it. Yes.
screen. I don't know. There should be a way to zoom this in a little bit. Is there? Not seeing it. Okay. Can you all see it though? Shimon the righteous.
Yes.
Okay. Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon the righteous. HaYemishiyari Knesset HaGdola. He was among the last surviving members of the Great Assembly. If you remember, last week we talked about what we call Mesorah, the tradition from Moses at Sinai, as it got passed down generation by generation, till we got to a much later period in time known as the Anshei Knesset HaGdol, the men of the Great Assembly. Shimon HaTzadik, Shimon the Righteous, which, by the way, if you want to, not many people in history get a title. Most people are Rabbi so and so, Mr. so and so, Ms. so and so, whatever it is. But to be called Shimon the Righteous, you gotta be up there in the top ranks. So Shimon HaTzadik, we'll talk a little bit about him in a moment, but he was one of the last surviving members of the Great Assembly. Hu Haya Omer, he used to say, and these are the three expressions or the three points that he felt very strongly about that people need to focus on. And he says, the world stands, famous Mishnah, the world stands on three things: Torah, Avodah, and Gemilut Chasadim. Torah, the service to God, and deeds of kindness, bestowing kindness to others. These are the three pillars upon which the world stands. We'll come back to the wording in a moment, but I want to give you a little bit of a historical framework. It's important to know the time frame here. Which time frame are we talking about? So, how many of you, I'm sure most of you, if not all of you, have heard of Alexander the Great? The great conqueror who came and literally conquered what was known the known world at that time. So the story goes, that Shimon HaTzadik was actually a contemporary of Alexander the Great. At this time, Greek philosophy was flourishing. There were revolutionary concepts of Aristotle that had taken over the world. And it seemed that the impression that the world was learning is that knowledge, wisdom, and might, power, is an invincible combination that would transform the world forever. That was what the world was beginning to see. They conquered everything with might, and everything was about contemplating the cosmos, and really philosophy was booming at the time. Yet, here we are, just a couple of thousand years later, and what do we know? How many of you have run into or have visited the Greek Empire? I'll give you a couple of 500-year leeway if you're interested, right? The Greek Empire exists no longer. It's not there anymore. You read about it. You'll go to Rome, you go to Greece, and you see remnants of the Acropolis that maybe testify to what once was. Right? Aristotelian science, much of it has been refuted at this point in history. Yet, the teachings of Shimon HaTzaddik, the teachings of the men of the Great Assembly, and all of the Mishnayos, all of the Mishnahs we're going to learn, is still alive and well. We're here to tell the story. We're here still. The Torah's teachings are still vibrant and contemporary and meaningful. I love to tell the story. I was at a dinner once. I was living in Columbus, and I was invited to one of the synagogues, had their annual dinner, like many shuls do. And they had brought in a speaker as a guest speaker to really, to wow the crowd. And he was an excellent speaker. But something, I don't really remember the main point, but one sidebar that he mentioned really stuck with me. He said that he was asked, what's his favorite place in Israel to visit? And of course, everybody assumed he was going to say Jerusalem or Haifa or Eilat or some nice place that's famous, great, wonderful area. He says his favorite place of all time he loves to visit is Caesarea. Caesarea. Okay. I mean, it's a nice town. I've been there, but it's nothing more than ruins. That's really all it is. I can think of many other cities that are much prettier. There are many other cities that have a much more vibrant life to them, daylife, nightlife. I mean, there's just so much in Caesarea. In Yiddish, they say garnished mit garnished. There's nothing going on there. So why is it, he said, why is this my favorite place? He says, because you go there and you see every single empire that had ever ruled, that had come and conquered. The Babylonians and the Byzantines and the Greeks and the Romans and this period and that period, right? And where are they? They're nowhere to be found except in the relics, in the ancient antiquities found in Caesarea. And here I am, he says, I, a Jew living in the year 2002. I can walk all over their ruins and I'm alive and well in my home country, in my home place. We're alive and well. If I happen to bump into a Byzantine, I'll be happy to say Shalom Aleichem, right? They're nowhere to be found. That's something. So here you have Alexander the Great, and he is absolutely conquering, going through it all. And yet, listen to a piece of Talmud. The Talmud tells us that an Alexander was coming through the Middle East. He actually came to the border of what we call Israel. And Shimon HaTzaddik, the author, our Mishnah, went out to greet him, to show kavod, to show honor to the great conqueror that he was. And as soon as Alexander saw Shimon HaTzaddik, now picture, I'm still a relatively young man. I'm getting a little grayer and I'm losing my hair fast, and it's a close race which one's going to happen first. But imagine somebody a little bit older with a nice, beautiful, flowing white beard. Just a certain regal presence, dressed beautifully, maybe even better than I am tonight. And out he comes to greet Alexander the Great, and Alexander stops in his tracks. The Talmud tells us that Alexander says to him, wait a second, I have had a recurring dream over and over and over again about my conquering and my success in all these different areas. And yet, there was a man came to me in my dream, and he looked exactly like you. You were the man in my dream. You're a holy man. I will not conquer your area. And it's brought down in history. Alexander the Great skipped. He skipped the land of Israel and didn't conquer it. Why? Because Shimon HaTzaddik went out to greet him, and Shimon HaTzaddik was the man that was in his dream. He bowed in reverence to the great Shimon HaTzaddik. Just a little background as to who's teaching us. What is the teaching that he tells us? I love this one. This is one of my favorites. I say that every week, but it's true. Shimon HaTzaddik says that the world stands on three pillars. Before we get to what the three are, get the imagery in your head. The world stands on three pillars. If let's pretend you had never heard this Mishnah before, and I wanted you to conjure up in your head that the world is being supported by fundamental principles, how many would you have chosen? Honestly, how many pillars, how many supports would you have assumed that the world stands on? Susan is
Hundreds.
suggesting four. Sid, what?
Hundreds.
Hundreds,
Maybe
right?
10. 10.
10. Oh, interesting. Why'd you choose 10, Robin?
Well, 10 commandments.
Okay, we understand 10 in Judaism is a big number. It's true. 10. Susan, why
13.
four? 13?
Yeah.
Why?
Maimonides.
Oh, Maimonides is way past this point. He's not around
Well,
yet. But
but
the 13 principles. Okay. Susan, why four?
for stability, for
Interesting.
the three, because three in terms of keeping a struct, keeping a foundation, sturdy, foundational,
Are
four.
there any architects or engineers in this group? No? Good. I can say whatever I want. Supposedly, I don't know. I never checked this out, but supposedly, believe it or not, a three-legged chair is structurally stronger than a four. That's what I was
Wow.
told. That's what I was told. Now, it's interesting. It's a total sidebar, but I love it. How many avot, how many forefathers do we have? It's not a trick question. Come on,
Three.
people. We have three: Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, Abraham, Isaac, and
Three.
Jacob, right? Three. And
Okay.
how many mothers are there?
Four.
Four. Four. Interesting.
Four.
Three men and four women. Okay, a lot, you can go in a lot of different directions with this. I'm just going to stay right on this on the narrow, straight and narrow. Just going to stay, between the buoys. Okay, they want to suggest that in principle, the world needs the three pillars. However, when you
So
want to bring it down to the practical
good.
of how to apply it, four is the more common number. But three is the actual foundational principles upon which the world is truly supported. These three pillars, tonight we're going to discuss various symbolism, what these three pillars really are representative of. But let's just read the words again. What are the three? Shimon HaTzaddik says Torah, right? The study, the learning, the observance of Torah. Number two, avodah. Avodah is often translated as work, but a better word is service. I like that word much better because when I think of work, I'm thinking of schwitzing. I'm thinking of pouring sweat as I schlep this massive, sleep sofa from the basement up to the third floor. That's work, right? That's not what avodah necessarily is. Avodah is a service. A slave or a servant in Hebrew is an eved. Doesn't mean he's doing laborious work, but it means he's in servitude to a master. Avodah is our service to God. We'll explain a little bit more, but that's really like in classics, it would be the temple service. That would be the classic terminology. When the Kohanim, the Levites, everybody was involved in things that happened in the temple, that was service, avodah. So you have Torah study, avodah is the service to God, and then you have gemilut chasadim, kindness, bestowing kindness. So let's explore these three, and there's really so much symbolism to this. Number one, there are basically three relationships that we have within the world. There's three relationships. You have what in Hebrew is called Bein Adam LaMakom, between man and God. Again, I don't mean man, I mean person. Between person and God, there's a relationship there. And there are certain mitzvot in the Torah that are associated specifically to nurture that relationship. For example, the mitzvah of Shabbos, keeping Shabbat, That has nothing to do with interpersonal relationships. That's a service that's between me and God. Now, do I want to expand it and have guests for my Shabbos meal? Yeah, that's all true. But intrinsically, the mitzvah of keeping Shabbos, the mitzvah of keeping kosher, the mitzvah of wearing tzitzis, the mitzvah of lighting candles for Shabbos, all of those things are mitzvos, are for nurturing the relationship between a human, a man, and God. That's one area of relationships. There's a second area, and that's interpersonal, bein adam lachavero, between man and his fellow. Many mitzvos, like the mitzvah of giving tzedakah, giving charity. That's to help out somebody in need. There's many mitzvos that are associated to nurture that relationship as well. And if you were to ask 99% of the people, they would stop there and say those are the two realms of relationships. But there really is a third one, and it's overlooked, and I think to our detriment. To appreciate this, I'm going to ask you a simple question. What does the word Torah mean? Simple question. We use it all the time, but I'm asking you, what is the actual definition of the word Torah?
Law.
Law.
Teaching.
Mishpat, our laws.
Mishpat. Teachings.
What?
Teachings.
Teachings. I'm getting warmer.
Guidelines.
Guide. Ooh, that's the word I'm really looking for. That's
guidelines.
Really is a guidance. And it really, it does relate to teaching, because how do you say teacher in Hebrew?
Mora.
Mora. Right?
Right?
Oh, whose class? You say, I said to my my young grandchild, I said, oh, who's your teacher this year? Oh, I have Mora Esti. Right? Like, oh my God. Mention her name. Esti, right? Mora, because that's the same word, Mora and Torah. It's the same thing. The one who's teaching, the one who's giving guidance.
Instruction.
Instruction. That's correct. Okay? For example, we all know that one of the first things we teach children when they begin to talk is the phrase, Torah tziva lanu Moshe, Mora Shaki la Yaakov. We even sing a song, Torah, 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 tziva lanu, right? Well, what does that mean? Oh, you're teaching this to a three-year-old. Torah tziva lanu, what? What are you, yeah, we're already teaching that young child that this word Torah is something that is so precious to us, that has been given as something that is an inheritance to all of us. We're so fortunate we teach that lesson. But the key word there is Torah. Torah is an instruction, an education, a teaching, a guidance. So now that you know that, so if I were to ask you, what am I supposed to do with the Torah? You say, well, you're supposed to observe it, Rabbi. Come on, you should know that. No, the answer is, I look to the Torah for guidance. I look to the Torah for instructions. But it's not only instructions on how to nurture my relationship with God. That's some mitzvot. It's not only there as instructions to teach me and guide me how to nurture my relationship with other people, interpersonal, and there are mitzvot associated with that. But here's the kicker, folks. It is an instruction manual on what makes you tick. It's an inside look to how human beings can succeed in life. It's almost as if it's reflective. And it's giving you the opportunity to look inside yourself. It's an X-ray, but from a spiritual standpoint. It shows you your spiritual kishkes. That's really what it is. The Torah says, if you want to succeed in life, here are the instructions for you to do well. For example, before there was a Torah given to the world, the concept of taking the seventh day off and rejuvenating yourself, taking Shabbos and resting from your work, was so foreign of a concept. However, the inventor of this invention called mankind said, I created this invention. Let me tell you how you can function best. Oh, you know how? Don't become a workaholic. Do not work 7 days a week. You will not succeed at your best. If you want peak performance, make sure you take a day off. That's a novel concept. Sure, that nurtures the relationship between commander and commandee, between God and us. But more than that, it's an insight about the character of man himself. It's instructions of how we function, how we tick, what makes us tick. So there's really three relationships: relationship between man and God, relationship man to man, and man to himself. Do not lose sight of that. It's important. I had the opportunity last night. I had a different class. No, you're not all invited. It was all about identifying your strengths and weaknesses, being honest with yourself. What are you good at? What do you need to overcome? But the idea is that you have to look inward. Where are you supposed to figure that out? That's where the Torah comes in. Because if you understand that you have to become a compassionate person, how do I know that? Because there are mitzvos that tell us you have an obligation to reach out to your fellow and help them. You can't turn a blind eye to someone in need, not just because you care about the other person, that's nice, but you have to become compassionate. How am I going to become compassionate? I'm born as a selfish being. Yeah, learn how to do it. There are mitzvot in the Torah that teach you the importance of compassion. There are mitzvot in the Torah that teach you about being sensitive to the feelings of others. That's where it all comes in.
So good.
Okay? So you have all three. You have all three relationships, and that's really these three pillars. You have Torah, which I'm translating now as the instruction manual to teach you about yourself.
Exactly.
You have Avodah. Class. Michelle, I'm just going to put you on mute just for now, just because it's hard. Okay. The avoda is service. That's a relationship between you and God, right? Temple service, prayer. Those are all services, right? We even call it. Who's coming to services this Shabbat, right? But then there's also gemilut chasadim, kindness. That's nurturing the interpersonal relationships. All three are critically necessary for the world and for us individually to succeed. Hence, Shimon HaTzadik says that the world stands on these three pillars. But I'm not done. There's so much more to this. Let's look at it from a different perspective and how it dovetails with this concept. Being kind to others. Well, let me start back. Everything that a human being does fits into one of three categories: an action, a speech, or a thought. Those are your three. There's nothing you do in your day, there's nothing you do in your life that isn't categorized as either an action, a speech, something you say with words, or a thought you're giving, you know, you're using your brain power. Am I missing anything? I don't think so. I think those are the only three possibilities. Okay? Now let's plug it in. What is gemilut chasadim? That's the easiest of them all. Kindness, is that an action, a speech, or a thought?
Action.
Has to be an action. I can have the best intentions in the world, but it doesn't mean squat because it doesn't help the guy if he needs help. Really, I thought about helping you. Well, that's very, that doesn't go too far. That doesn't even win the intention award. It's nothing. And yeah, I'm going to help. I'd be happy to help you. Yeah, and then you do nothing. How good is that? Also, you're not going to get too far. Kindness to others requires action. Fact. Okay? How about service? Service to God. Is that action, thought, or speech? The answer is it's all three if you really think about it. It's all of it. But identifying the ultimate service is actually speech. Believe it or not, is engaging your brain. Sorry. It's really thought. I'll give you an example. There are many, many, many people, more in the Hasidic world, certainly those in the Kabbalistic world, that before they perform any mitzvah, whether it's davening in the morning, giving tzedakah in the afternoon, lighting whatever it is, they say a little, I'll call it a paragraph, it's only a couple sentences, that expresses that they are doing this mitzvah for the express purpose of honoring God's commandment. They put their brain in gear. I had an English teacher in high school who told us this over and over and over again, when of course we were a bunch of rambunctious boys calling out in the middle of class. You've heard stories like that, but you probably don't know what I'm talking about, right? You haven't experienced it. She would say to us over and over again, boys, do not put mouth in gear. Do not put mouth in motion before brain is in gear. Right? That's what she would say. Do not put mouth in motion before brain is in gear. And she was right, because we would just say whatever. And she'd look at us like, did you give any thought to that whatsoever? Or you just blurted it out. If you want to do a service, you have to engage your brain. Do you know that the Talmud actually says that when we pray, it's a requirement, really, you have to engage your thoughts, your heart. It can't be robotic. It's not what prayer is. It's not just I'm reading down a list of words and checking the box and saying, yeah, I said the words. It's supposed to involve, in the Talmudic words, the tefillah, prayer, is known as avodah shebelev, service of the heart. Yes, you still have to enunciate. You still have to utter the words. That's part of the prayer. But just enunciating the words without any thought, without any engagement of the brain, is not really, it's empty. It's the shell without the nut. It's the husk without the kernel. You have to engage the brain. So while kindness, gemilut chasadim, is an action, avodah is much more engaging the thoughts. That means Torah is associated with
speech.
Speech. It makes perfect sense, because when you learn, it's not supposed to be just reading. Like, you know, you sit back in the hammock and instead of reading, you know, a Charles Dickens novel, you just, oh, you know what? I'm going to be super religious today. I'm going to read the Bible in the hammock and just peruse it with the words. I'm not going to tell you that's wrong, but I'm definitely going to tell you that's not the best. There's a way to learn. People who've had the opportunity to go to a yeshiva or a seminary, or even just to pop your head in to see what it looks like. I had a great opportunity. It's, again, one of my favorite stories. I was learning in Ner Israel in Baltimore, yeshiva here. And I guess I'd been there a few years already. And it was right before Maariv. It was right before the evening services. And whatever, I was going to use the facilities like 5-10 minutes before the service, get myself ready. Okay, fine. And as I'm walking out, right by the entrance, there was a fellow who didn't look like he belonged. I mean, just like, you know, the overwhelming majority of the guys are wearing white shirts, black pants, you know, the classic yeshiva look. And this guy's wearing a hot pink polo shirt, you know, an older man. And not that there's anything wrong, but it was like, it caught my eye. So I went over and I said, hi, welcome. What can I do for you? You know, I struck up a conversation with him and we became very, very close friends. He was there because he had yahrzeit. He had say Kaddish for his mom. Okay. Why do I tell you this story? Is because he said he had heard about the yeshiva for years and years. He had no idea really what it was. He just knew, okay, they study Torah, whatever that means. Never really experienced it. And he walked in that first time. And again, if you've never experienced it, what I'm going to tell you is just going to sound ridiculous. But it's a huge room. There's probably seats for, I don't know, 600-700 people. Huge room. And there's tables and chairs. And everybody is like opposite each other around tables. And of course, in outside the yeshiva world, they call it, it's like a study hall. It's like a library. And you know, there's lots of books. So, oh my God, this guy walked in and that's what he's envisioning. He's envisioning like you did back when you were in college and you went to the study hall or the library. Everybody was talking like this. And it was very quiet. And you get your point across very, very softly. And he walks in and oh my God, it sounds like World War III. No, what are you talking about? That can't be what the verse is talking about. Do you not remember what the Rebbe said about this? And they're screaming. And there's 400-500 guys all at the top of their lungs giving this. And he's like, am I in the right place? I heard this was a library. This was a study hall. You can't study Torah as just reading a novel, just reading a book. It's got to be with It's got to be with a sense of, you got to talk it through and going out and, right? You got to tell the story like we do in Passover, right? But this is even more. This is like the Seder on steroids. That's what it is. It's like supercharged. He was just like floored. He says, is there something unique today? I said, no, it's Tuesday. It's just a regular Tuesday. Welcome to Yeshiva. So these three pillars, I'm showing you that it's not just, oh, we can find so many different patterns of three. I want to give you the thought like this. If the wholesome character, the totality of character of a human being is comprised by these three categories, because they encompass everything, speech, thought, and action. Where am I getting this concept, besides the fact that I read it somewhere? I want to go back to the word here. Let's go back to the mission itself. Okay. This chat is throwing me off here. All right. Here, let me share one more time. Let's read the words. Okay. Shimon the righteous was among the last surviving. He would say, the world stands on three things. You see that? The world. Yes? I'm going to highlight it here. Right? Oops. The world, whatever. The world stands on three things. Yes? Now I want you to see it in Hebrew.
Al shlosha devarim.
Okay. Al shlosha devarim. I highlighted it. Al, the last word on that line. Al, next line. Shlosha devarim, on three things. Ha'olam. That's how we translate the world. Omed stands. However, this word olam is a fascinating word, because the Talmud, when it discusses man's responsibility in this world and the fact that mankind, humankind is the custodial, the custodian of this world, and it's our responsibility to take good care of it, the Talmud, the Mishnah, actually calls man olam katan, a mini world. Mankind, we are the microcosm of the massive universe that surrounds us. And I'll show you even more. One of the most difficult sentences in the entire Torah is when God creates man. Man is created on the sixth day of creation. Prior to him, prior to creation of Adam, you have the creation of everything else. You have the heavens, the earth, the sea, the dry land. You have the trees and the flowers and the birds and the fish and the animals and everything. And each one of them, it says, God said to bring forth whatever it is that he's creating. When it comes to the creation of man, there's a whole different expression. Vayomer Elokim, God says, Na'aseh Adam, let us make man in our image. Now, if you're just cruising along because it's Shabbat morning and everybody just wants to be done, you just, I remember that, and you just keep going. But if you took just 5 seconds to stop and say, I'm sorry, what's wrong with that sentence? Who? What do you mean? Let us make man?
Who's the us?
Oh, who's us? Does God forbid, I don't want to say the words, right? Does God have a partner that he wants to go ahead and say, hey, let's take a consensus. Should we make man? Who is he talking to? Let us. Very difficult sentence, very difficult verse. And you hear my question? Yes, Anne, you with me? Are you still with me? There you go. Okay. Right? Nasel, let us make man. There's a lot of commentary. There's many answers to it. But the one I want to share with you tonight is beautiful. Beautiful. Remember, man is pretty much the last creation of the 6 days of creation. God turns to everything that has been created in the universe till now. He turns to the ants, and he turns to the uncles, and he turns to the giraffes. That was a joke. And he turns to the hippopotamuses, and he turns to the plants, and he turns to the stars and the moon and the sky, everything. He turns to all of them, and he says, I want to create one being that has at its core a little bit of everything that came before. Because man is going to be in charge of all of that's here. Man has to know the strengths. Man has to know the essence of everything that comes before it. How terrible it is to have a boss who doesn't know the strengths of his or her employees. They have this person doing this job and the other person doing a different job, and they're both ill-suited for those jobs. A great employer gets to know their employee and say, you know what? You're really good at organizing things. Let me put you in charge of the upcoming retreat for the staff, because you're very detail-oriented. You put a guy who's just out there and he's just so smart and can figure out these theorems, and he's not the guy you want organizing this, you know, the staff pickup baseball game. He's not the guy you want. You have to know their strengths. You have to know what works for them. God implants within man a little bit of everything. So when he says, let us make man, man, in a way, as I said before, man is the microcosm of the entire universe. So let's go back to our Mishnah. Rav Shimon HaTzadik says, the world, the Olam, stands on three pillars. Understanding number one is that we're talking about the universe on three fundamental principles of Torah, Avoda, and Gemilah Chasadim that addresses all the relationships of the people in the world. But there's a second level, and that is, it's talking about the wholesomeness within man himself. The three most important character, or all, not most important, the three categories of what man will do in his life, his speech, his thoughts, and his actions. They should be guided by these three principles, Torah, Avoda, and Gemilot Chasadim. I'll show you. This goes even further. Susan had mentioned, you know, that a four-legged stool, right, a four-legged chair as opposed to three. I want to suggest, and again, not my own thought, but I saw it from someone else and I thought it was a beautiful insight. Who says, let's go back to this Mishnah. I'm curious, how many of you, or did any of you have the following thought? Let's go back to the words here. The words read, Shimon the righteous, he would say, the world stands on three pillars. Yes, the world stands on three things. And he lists what they are. Did you understand it as you need all three? Or here are three principles upon which the world stands. You can choose. It could be the Torah pillar, or it could be the Avodah pillar, or it could be the Gemilot Chasadim pillar. There are three pillars that you can choose from. Different strokes for different folks. Did anybody see it that way? I'm curious. No? Now that I bring it up, is that a plausible way of reading it? I know it's contrary to what we've always thought, but hey, that's my job. My job is to get you to think outside the box a little bit here. Could it be that there's only one of the three that the world needs? It's possible you can read it this way. No, Marty's like, no, no chance. No chance. Why?
Because the word and.
That's an English word. You don't do and? How about it's al ha-Torah?
There's a bit.
What should it say? It should say oh. It should say or.
Yes.
You're right.
If you want it all three, if you want to separate the three, then you use an or.
Correct. But in Hebrew, you could have an or. If I'm listing and say of the following, here's my list. These are the pillars from which you can choose. You can choose Torah and Avodah and Gemilat Chasadim. These are what you can choose from. One could make the argument. You don't like it, that's fine.
Well, I think you need all three, because if it stands on three legs and you take one away, it falls over.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful idea. And there are those commentaries that make that exact point. They make that point. However, and I'm not disagreeing. Marty, I'm not going to come after you. Don't worry. This is fine. We can go with the understanding you need all three. I'm just throwing one more thing for you to think about. Again, my job is not to convince you. My job is to get the wheels turning. That's all. That's it. What you do with it, that's your problem. But here's where I'm going with it. We just started a couple of weeks ago after Simchat Torah. We started reading the Torah all again from the beginning, Bereshit, right? From the beginning of Genesis. And just last week, or 2 weeks ago, really, we had the Parsha of Lech Lecha. Lech Lecha, where Avram is sent on this journey, his first real, you know, to become the father of our nation. He's on his journey, okay? The verse says that Hashem promises him, V'heyei Beracha, that with you, if you go ahead and you're going to travel to the place that I'm going to tell you, I'm not even telling you what it is now, but you'll see, trust me, if you do this, then this, this, and this, V'heyei Beracha, and you will be for a blessing. Rashi, quoting early sources, is bothered. What do you mean you'll be for a blessing? It's almost like if you go to a funeral, it's like it's the obligatory, may his memory be for a blessing. It's like you have to end with that sentence. You don't, but that's what everybody does, right? What does it mean you'll be for a blessing? So Rashi quotes again an early source that says the following. Two words, b'cha chotmin. With you, it will be finished. It will be sealed. What does that mean, with you will be sealed? So if you're familiar with the way we structure the first few blessings in the Shemona Esrei, in the Amidah of our davening, right? We start with Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Velokei Avoteinu, and we list Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Velokei Yaakov, the God of Avraham, God of Yitzchak, and God of Yaakov. We've listed everybody, those three, right? And we continue. Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Vanera, blah, 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 blah. Melech Ozer Umoshia Umagain. You are king, you are a helper, you are the salvation, and Magain, Umoshia Umagain, and shield. Baruch Atah Hashem. Blessed are you, Hashem. And what do we say? Magain Avraham. Hey, dude, hey, you left off too. If I'm Yitzchak or Yaakov, I'm like, I'm still here. Hello. Why is it only shield of Avraham? What happened to Yitzchak and Yaakov? I started the blessing with all three of them. How did I just get truncated and get, you know, why is only Avraham? Many commentaries are pointing to this Rashi that I just quoted to you, that Hashem was saying to him, being that you are the first one to start this journey and get the ball rolling to become my nation, you deserve to be the concluding part of that bracha. While you mention all of the avot, all three of them, you'll be the conclusion. With you, we will finish it off and say only Magen Avraham. Okay? That's how some understand it. I once read this many years ago, and it really struck a chord with me. And it ties into what we're talking about tonight. These three pillars. Let's associate these three pillars with the three ancestors. Which one would you put for Avraham? Torah, Avoda, or Gemilat Chasadim? Which one? Torah study, divine service, or kindness?
Kindness.
Hands down, not even a question. Avram is for sure. He is the host with the most. Sorry, stole it, right? Sarah was the hostess with the mostest. But that's Avram is definitely associated with Gemilat Chasadim. Bestowing kindness, everything about welcoming the guests and reaching out to people and caring, praying for Sodom, the evil city. I'm like, it's all about everybody else. Okay. Who do you think gets associated with divine service, the ultimate service and sacrifice to God? You only got Isaac. Two choices left, folks.
Isaac.
Isaac, of course. He's the one who's, so to say, sacrificed on the altar, the Akedah, right? He goes that direction. He's Avoda. And Yaakov gets associated with Torah. Muriel, make a note of it. I know Yaakov's your guy. Okay? These are your... We're fine. So they match up. Avraham is Gemilat Chasadim. Yitzchak is Avoda. And Yaakov is Torah. Yes? Today's day and age. In today's day and age, where Avoda, I think we can all agree, is in serious decline. Decline in that we don't even have a temple. So that kind of divine service is just not applicable. What took its place? Prayer services. Come on. You've all been to synagogue. You know that's not an easy sell. Yeah, come. We're having services. Oh, especially Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. Yeah, we'll be done in no time. Yeah, good luck with that. Right? It's not exactly the most enticing. It's not, and Avodah is on a decline. There's no question. So Torah is on a decline. Avodah is on a decline. But you know what's doing really well? You know what has been the hallmark of the Jewish people throughout all the exiles, throughout all the generations, throughout everything we've been through, good times and bad? It's always been Gemilut Chasadim. It's always that care and concern for other human beings, whether they're Jewish or not. You look down the list of philanthropy in the world, Jews are at the top. And it didn't make a difference if it's a Jewish cause, a non-Jewish cause, for whatever's out there. Very, very often, it's Jewish money that's out there because we care about people. We care about the world. We want the world and the people in it to be a better place. That's in our DNA. Who is that from? That's from Avram and Sarah. No question in my mind. Perhaps this commentator wanted to suggest that when Rashi, understanding that when God says you will be for a blessing, and Rashi says, Bechachotmin, with you we will conclude, he's not only talking about the blessing in the Shemona Esrei, he's talking about world history. With your trait, Avraham, will we come to a conclusion? Torah, it's not being studied by the masses, unfortunately. Yes, thank God it's on the uprise. There's more Torah study now than there was certainly 100 years ago. Now, it's like not to be believed, let alone in this country. It was like an impossibility that Torah would be studied. No way. People in Europe said it'll never make it. Never. Never survive. So yeah, thank God Torah, there's an upswing, but the masses of the Jewish people are not taking the time to study and connect with Torah. Avoda is also not doing great, but you know what's doing great? What is now, even in the conclusion of time, at the end of world history, what stands out is Gemilut Chasadim, is this kindness, this trait. And perhaps that's why, Marty, you can understand the order. It's out of order here, folks. If this represents Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, shouldn't the order of the three pillars been Gemilut Chasadim number one, representing Avraham, then Avodah, then Torah? If it's supposed to be Avram, then Yitzchak, then Yaakov? Isn't it out of order? But it's not. Because the ending is always, how are we going to finish? Yes, Torah is critical. Avodah is critical, but what's going to be the staying power for the Jewish people at the very end? Torah may slack, Avodah may slack, but Gemilut Chasadim is there at the end. Okay. Where does the time go? Sheesh. Okay. Let me make a couple of other points. More patterns of three. I know I'm throwing a lot of information at you tonight. I apologize, but it's like hashtag sorry, not sorry.
We can take it.
Okay, good. Hey, you bring it on. Good. Okay. There were three vessels in the Mishkan, in the tabernacle or the temple, that had a very special design. There were lots of beautiful vessels, many of them gold and silver. Some of them were copper. But there were three very prominent vessels that had a unique design, that it looked like a crown, like a serrated look to it. You know, up, down, up, down, up, down. Like picture the crown, right? There were three vessels in the temple that had that design. They were the ark that housed the Torah, the tablets. The ark had it. One of the altars, the mizbeach. And then the third was the table, the shulchan, that housed the showbread. The ark, the mizbeach, the altar, and the shulchan, the table that had the showbread on it. Those were the three. Why those three? They represent all different things. But for tonight's purpose, these three really correspond beautifully to these three pillars. And then I'll end with one kicker that puts it all together. Okay? Let's go through it this way. Torah, right? Because those are the three pillars. Torah, Avodah, and Gemilut Chasadim now correspond to the ark, the altar, and the table. And it's a perfect correspondence. It makes perfect sense to say that the pillar of Torah is represented and corresponds to the Ark. The Ark, which housed the Torah, that housed the Ten Commandment tablets, that makes perfect sense to me. That's a one-to-one. Perfect. Avodah, the service in the temple. Well, what's the classic vessel that's used in the service is the altar, is the Mizbeach. That's the classic one. And the Shulchan, the showbread, which was really to benefit the Kohens, who were partaking and doing the service. There were loaves of bread that they were given when they finished their service, and a new batch were brought in for the next group. But it was all about decking out your finest table for whom? For others. That's Gemilut Chasadim. Yes? I think it's a pretty straightforward correspondence. Here's the kicker, folks. Ladies and gentlemen, all three, if you take the words Aron, the ark, Mizbeach, the altar, and Shulchan, the table, it is the same numerical value of the word Shabbos. Shabbat. Same gematria, same numerical value. The ark, the altar, and the table. That is Shabbos. And you know why? Because it's exactly what Shabbos is all about. It is our weekly timeout to reorient ourselves and take the time to acquire these three aspects that not only, as we said, represent the three wholesome characteristics within the person, the relationships that a person has, the speech, the thought, the action, but also the relationships between man and God, man to man, man to himself, but is the three pillars of the universe. What better time to remind ourselves? This is why we're here. Yeah. Was it a novel concept when God introduced the concept of Shabbos? Yeah, it was novel back then, 3,300 years ago. But ladies and gentlemen, I do not know. I cannot. I consider myself a relatively intelligent guy. I truly cannot understand how people do without Shabbos. I cannot. In my brain, it just doesn't compute. We can't keep going nonstop. You need to be able to refocus and get yourself oriented. Shabbos is that weekly time out, that weekly reminder that I have obligations to myself. I have obligations to others. I have an obligation to my creator. I have relationships. I have to work on my character. I have to be better in terms of avoda, gemilat chasadim, Torah, these pillars. It's not surprising to me, therefore, why the Aron, the Mizbeach, the Shulchan, the Ark, the Altar, and the Table, same numerical value as Shabbos. Bam, boom, take that to the bank. I'm gonna stop here. It's a couple minutes early, but I gave you a lot to think about. And the truth is, I didn't even get to everything. There's so much more to this Mishnah. All right, sorry, one more piece. And I'll tell you why, because it's going to play a role coming up. You have to see this. Okay. We totally glossed over it. I don't think, maybe someone picked up on it, but no one raised it as a question. Let's be very careful in the reading here. Let's read it again. Shimon the righteous was among the last surviving members of the great assembly. So far, so good. Yes. We gave the historical background. Now comes a line. He would say, okay, is that really necessary? Duh. No. He would say, it comes out even better in the Hebrew. Look at the Hebrew. Hu haya omer. He would say, exactly as it's translated into English. We will see this expression. He would say, or they would say if it's a grouping. This is almost every Mishnah. So-and-so, Hillel Omer, right? Hillel Haya Omer. He would say, obviously, these are their statements. I mean, obviously, why is the Mishnah stressing it? Here's what I want you to remember, that when we talk about sentences or statements or phrases or expressions, you may quote me as saying, I said such, Rabbi T said this, Rabbi T said that. But it doesn't have the same weight unless I model that behavior. You see, I can go ahead and tell you the greatest things about this and that, but if I'm not living it, it's somewhat, I don't know, it's somewhat contradictory. If I go ahead and I tell you it's so important, Shabbos is so important, and Shabbos and Shabbos and Shabbos, right? And then I don't observe Shabbos in any way, shape, or form, the words ring hollow. The Mishnah tells us that these statements that we study in Pirkei Avos, author after author after author, why would it say he? Because he would first live it. He role modeled it. That gave him the permission to then say, here's what's important. He lived it. He modeled it. Then he would say. It's almost like there's a comma. Who? He had this concept of the world stands on three pillars, and he lived it. Therefore, he teaches us to follow suit. That's my last thought. Hu haya omer. You can even look, it's coming up in number three, right? You have all these people, and here it is, number three. He would say, next one. Yossi ben Yoezer, he would say. I mean, it goes on every Mishnah. It always has that statement. He would say, or they would say. Because they modeled it, they lived it, and then they taught it. That's how we do it. Listen, we all know the expression, as you know, when we talk about kids, right? Raising children, do as I say, not as I do. Worst parenting ever. Ever. That's up there in my book of biggest no-nos, up there with sticks and stones can break my bones, but names can never harm me. Those two should be thrown away, never to be seen again. Horrible. Terrible lessons. Do as I say, not as I do. Are you out of your mind? That's why the Mishnah stresses. He would say it. Why? Because he modeled it. That's how we have to go through this. Okay. Questions? Thoughts? Good news. I don't hear the music playing yet, so we're still good. Yes, Susan.
Simple 10 question. Is there any way that the Hebrew could be written to say he lived it?
Yes.
Then he said?
Yes.
And so what is the why is it written this way?
Great question. So let's take a step back. We touched on it in the first class of Pirkei Avos. What was the role of the Mishnah? We're studying Mishnah, right? We talked about how it came to be. This was really an oral tradition that was passed down from Moshe at Sinai all the way through the generations until persecution became a real issue. And a lot of the traditions were potentially getting lost. Rabbi Judah the Prince, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi made the decision to start recording and writing down what had been oral till this point. But he wanted, Susan, this is the important part. He purposely wrote it in a short, brief way. Perhaps, I don't want to use the word cryptic, but shorthand notes, because he didn't want to be the full elaboration. He wanted it to jog our memories of what was taught. So yeah, if Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi had been Dickens, who was paid by the word, by the way, fact, right? That's why his books are so blessed long, right? If Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was Dickens, then he would have said, the man, the great, the one who lived and modeled and was such a great, he would say, but that's not his point. He wants to just tip the scale, just tip you off. There's more to being, because the whole phrase is unnecessary. Therefore, he puts in a little something to say, let's scratch beneath the surface. There's much more to that sentence than there appears. All the Mishnah, and it's not just Pirkei Avos, Mishnah in general. That's why the Talmud is so big, because every one line and every way it's phrased and used that word as opposed to another word is worthy of a conversation. That's what the Talmud is. It's alluding to so much depth, but that's what it is. So I'm suggesting that that is why it's not written in the full elaborate form, because that's not his intention. He wants you to think, what more is there? And just because I offered this explanation, hey, there's 18 of us on here, more than that. We can offer other. Go right ahead. I'm not offering you the one and only answer. That's the beauty of it. There's so much depth and richness to all of it. But it takes time. You have to be able to analyze and look at it and say, You know, what is, why would he phrase it that way? And why is he saying it at all? Like we did, the ordering seems out of order. Okay, each aspect of that. That's what we do in the Mishnah. Robin.
So sort of going along with that, just sort of more background. So is that why, because these, this, you know, they were great men of the assembly, or anybody who was having, you know, each little blurb in the Mishnah, like Shimon and the righteous, like, obviously they would say much, much more, but it must be that this is like the most important thing.
Right.
They're starting to condense their teachings into the one thing they would want you to take right. away. Is that
exactly.
what that is?
I'm sure Shimon HaTzadik taught, excuse me. I'm sure he taught far more classes than I have ever taught. But if you want to know, if Shimon HaTzadik came to you and he said, give it to me on one leg, Rabbi, this is what he would say. This is how he would say, these are my three core principles that I want you to walk away with. We had three core principles last week, and we're going to see, we're not going to get to it tonight, but we have to talk about what's so unique about this, the fact that everything is threes. We'll get to it, I hope, God willing. Yes, we're good? Okay, wonderful. All right, have a great rest of the week, everybody. God willing,
thank
we'll
you,
meet
Rabbi
back here
Jane.
Next Wednesday at 8. And we will.
Night, Liz.
And we.